thank everybody who was here. Michelle and I are so grateful for the friends and family. It means so much to us, and I hope you're aware of that.
This is USA.
You've probably heard everyone and thing from cavemen and lizards tell you how to save money on your insurance. Ever notice they never tell you how? This is David Susie from Susie Insurance. Since 1914, Susie Insurance has been helping our customers save money. For something as simple as packaging your home and auto insurance together, you can save up to 15% on your combined policies. An extra $500 or more in your pocket is real savings. Call Susie Insurance at 800-585-2218 for a free quote. Serving Rhode Island and Massachusetts.
Oh, 9,000.
Democrats on the House Intelligence Committee are prepared to black out certain parts of their memo about the FBI's Russia investigation to ensure there's no harmful spilling of secrets. Republican Congressman Peter King of New York has seen the memo. He talks about what is in there that would maybe give away some secrets.
Yeah, there were a number of things in there that, and not even changes the substance of the memo. I want that memo out. But there are some indicators in there which would show our enemies how we're tracking them, you know, different methods that we have. But that should be easy to take out without in any way changing the substance of the memo.
An unexploded World War II bomb has forced the closure of a London City airport. USA Radio Network's John Clemens reports.
The ordnance was discovered in the River Thames during a construction project at the airport, forcing the police to set up a 700-foot exclusion zone until the Royal Navy can remove the bomb. London City Airport officials say this will cause a disruption of all inbound and outbound flights and that passengers should check with their airline before traveling. Some roads around the airport have also been closed until authorities determine how to deal with the 1940s device.
NBC once again found itself in hot water as it was forced to apologize to South Koreans for an on-air remark made by an analyst that cited Japan as an example that has been important to South Koreans' own transformation. The remark was made by the analyst during Friday's opening ceremonies on NBC. For USA Radio News, I'm
WNRI Woonsocket.
Weather brought to you by John the Roofer, with over 65 years of service to the Blackstone Valley. Find them online at johntheroofer.com or call 1-866-906-ROOF. That's 1-866-906-7663.
We'll start off with cloudy skies today. We'll have a high of 43 degrees. We'll see sunshine by the afternoon. 10-mile-an-hour winds as well. We'll have an overnight low around 20 degrees. Cooler on Tuesday. We'll have plenty of sunshine, but we'll only see a high around 37 degrees. 25 the overnight with clear skies Tuesday into Wednesday. We'll warm up around 50 degrees on Valentine's Day with probably cloudy skies. This is Jeff Gamache with WNRI Weather.
The views expressed on the following program are those of its hosts and participants and no way reflect those of the staff or management of WNRI.
The time for empty talk is over. Now arrives the hour of action.
It's time for the John DePietro Show on News Talk, WNRI, 1380 AM and 95.1 FM.
He's a special kind of sentinel.
Mr. DePietro, who is in the eye of the storm.
Suddenly, John DePietro became the story.
Radio talk show host John DePietro.
All right, here we go, folks. Welcome to Political Monday. Good afternoon, Carl. There's Rosanna. Hola. It's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. Graham is brought to you by our friends. And boy, the email I get of people saying, thank you for telling us, Juan, about the Lodge Pub and Eatery, 40 Breakneck Hill Road in Lincoln. The Lodge Pub and Eatery, whether it's lunch or dinner, a great meal is waiting for you at the Lodge Pub and Eatery. They can accommodate up to 100 people, several dining areas throughout the establishment. Enjoy the famous salad bar, always stocked with fresh vegetables and more. The Lodge Pub and Eatery, 40 Breakneck Hill Road in Lincoln, serving lunch and dinner. Well, folks, it is a Political Monday. Good afternoon to all. Hello there, Derek. All who are enjoying the program, Facebook Live, brought to you by EliteWirelessRI.com. EliteWirelessRI.com. And speaking of that, EliteWirelessRI.com, we want to say congratulations to our friend Sal, who became a father over the weekend. Beautiful baby girl born. So cute. Little Valentina. Absolutely beautiful. So congratulations to our friend Sal, who is, in fact, EliteWirelessRI.com. So let's get some thumbs up. A beautiful baby girl born to our friend Sal, who became a father on Saturday. Just wonderful, wonderful news. Well, folks, it is Political Monday. Joining us right now, he is the managing editor for Ocean State Current. Hello there, Lisa. OceanStateCurrent.com. And it's our friend Justin Katz. Good afternoon, Justin.
Good afternoon.
Justin, I want to start off. This is quite a story that Dan McGowan unveiled last Monday, and there's been a lot of twists and turns with this story that seemingly whenever you have a secret agreement kind of started to jump out. And just to walk people through it, it seems it's one of those stories that every time you turn over another rock, there's something else there. It started with that Dan McGowan of Channel 12 broke the story that Governor Raimondo had come to terms with this, quote, secret agreement that they would not release regarding fundraising with, you know, and we talked about it. You're talking about people that really didn't have any money, but it was the Providence Democrat Committee led by this guy, Patrick Ward. That started the week, and it seemed a little odd, and there were certainly a lot of questions about it, and people questioning, and rightfully so, is this a way to go around the party as far as fundraising? And I think everyone realized that it was. Then got word that he had put out this anti-Italian Godfather-mocking meme of then Councilman Nick Narducci was saying that it was racist and insulting and that he should step down. Then you had Mayor Lorza even say that he should step down. You had other Democrats condemn it. Notably, you had Senate President Dominic Ruggiero. Ward was still pleading that he wanted to stay on, and he was sorry and offered an apology. Then we learned that Ward was even a state employee and became a state employee last June, and his wife, who's on the council, is also happens to be a state employee. So last Friday, he then resigned, and now today, Chairman Bell, who we just got off the phone with, has filed a complaint with the State Ethics Commission to investigate this fundraising agreement between Governor Raimondo's reelection campaign and the Providence Democrat City Committee, chaired by a state employee. So I am very anxious to hear any thoughts you have on this, but especially the latest developments.
Well, it's one of those stories where it seems relatively minor, you know, a small fundraising deal with a city committee over, you know, who knows what kind of little small scale political stuff. But it's really such a great microcosm of so much that goes on in Rhode Island politics and politics generally. It's almost difficult to know where to begin. But with the ethics complaint, we'll see. I mean, it's one of those areas of the ethics, the code of ethics in the state, which is largely in state law, but depends a lot on the ongoing precedent set by the Ethics Commission, which issues advisory opinions and rulings over time to distort the code of ethics in ways that they're very strange. For example, a couple of years ago, I filed a complaint in Tiverton because the town council's solicitor represented the town clerk as a client in front of the town council. He literally got up from the table, walked around to represent a client in front of the council that he had just been serving. And the commission didn't even get to the actual commission because the people on their staffers and lawyers decided not to touch it. It turns out that if you work for your government, you're not corrupted, basically. There has to be a private sector touch, which is bizarre because these are people making very good livings within government. And there's an appearance in this case with the governor and Patrick Ward, as well as his wife. There's an appearance of impropriety there. It's just it's very clearly in the spirit of the code of ethics, that this kind of thing shouldn't be going on, or that Patrick Ward should have recused on any vote for a deal at the very least. But because it's all within government, hey, it's just people, public servants, you know. They're just in it for the good of the people. There can't be any ethical violations there. I suspect that's the result we'll get on that piece, but we really shouldn't. So maybe people will learn that's how ethics goes. But the whole story is just kind of bizarre. What I've been thinking of a lot, you had actually mentioned last week, talking about, I think it was last week, maybe the week before, talking about using this money potentially to hire people to go out and get mail ballots.
Yes.
We saw in Newport,
yes,
special election. And it really starts to, all the pieces start to come together. So, for example, Ken Block has been making a lot of noise this week on Facebook moderate party founder Ken Block, about early voting in Pawtucket, which he doesn't have any real interest in the special election in Pawtucket for state Senate, but he noticed that literally by the time all the paperwork is done and people are actually running for office, there's maybe one day before people can start voting by early voting through the mail ballots, emergency voting, as they call it. And if that's the case, you're really starting to look at this situation where you can slip money to paid professionals who are going out there. In the case in Newport, she was a notary public. So you go out, notary public, sorry.
They made her a notary. She was not. They made her a notary June 22nd. Then she began her quest. So that came part and parcel with the job, almost like on-the-job training.
Yeah, exactly. So she's going out almost literally getting votes, buying votes for a candidate. So you can see how this, you know, everybody talks about, well, they can't really use it for Governor Raimondo. If the agreement was, from what we can tell about the agreement, the governor wants people who want to give her more money, she would direct up to $10,000 per person to the city council for, you know, quote unquote, party building exercises. That could be hiring people to go out. And of course, it applies up and down the ballot. So the city council would also provide this service to favored other Democrats in other races. But obviously, it benefits the governor directly. So that would be the idea, is all this money could flow into them. They could hire all these people to go out, maybe get buses for if there's early in-person voting, to bring them to the polls and vote in place. So this is really just pouring money in to finance your ground game. So that's becoming increasingly clear how this whole thing kind of works in the early voting and the mail ballots. And the fact that Patrick Ward, there were members of his committee not even present for the vote, it starts to look really, really suspicious. And I think a lot of us suspect that this is kind of thing that just always goes on. It's only just now, I don't know if they're getting careless or if they're getting, if they're just, with internet and so on and so forth, we're able to see into the elite a little bit better in Rhode Island recently, but it's becoming clear that what we've always suspected is probably really actually how it all goes on.
You know what's interesting, Justin, is this was clearly the Raimondo people, the one thing that I think that they have mastered and no one can doubt, and I've said this before almost jokingly, but I'm serious about it, is the one thing that she is really good on, very knowledgeable. Maybe they dropped the ball with the whole cool and warmer and dropped the ball with UHIP, but they are on top of fundraising, do's and don'ts and ins and outs and everything else. I mean, this is like Cook County, Illinois, back when Kennedy won the election in 1960. But so they, to me, and I've heard this before, they were looking for an end around. If this goes to the party, you have Mattiello could get his claws into it. You have Joe McNamara has his claws into it. The beauty of this Providence Democrat City Committee is they basically, you know, operate as their own entity. So you wouldn't have McNamara, the head of the party, involved. You wouldn't have Mattiello, who's still very, very powerful. Many times the speaker then even picks who it is that's the head of the party. But this goes back, this Patrick Ward, Justin, he was hired last June. The Raimondo people gave him this state job. So this is not even something that just emerged, you know, during the holidays of somebody thinking out loud. I mean, there's no way that I believe that it is a coincidence that he got the job last June and then, boom, this gets knocked, you know, unveiled in January. That to me shows me anyway, and I want your thought, but just how far down the line the Raimondo people look towards their end goal, and more importantly, how much time they spend focusing on ways regarding fundraising.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you have all that money for your campaign. You can hire lawyers to look through this, comb through this stuff and overcome your problems. It's in some ways, it's disappointing. Well, I guess in a lot of ways it's disappointing. So with so much not working properly in a state, whether it's UHIP or what have you, I mean, in that case, it was like the Keystone Cops. You know, Raimondo decided to fire everybody who was doing the social work processing. or not everybody, but a good portion, and the system didn't work, you know, that just takes a little bit of foresight, a little bit of, let's just keep these people going in case we need some backup. And in that case, no, we don't even notice it. Or you mentioned cooler and warmer. Rhode Islanders are getting used to the litany of things, or the paw socks. There seems the governor was for it, not for it. You know, I'm for it, but I'm going to kind of back off. I'm not that for it. All that kind of stuff, it's like bumbling. But when it comes to getting her political career advanced, they got their act down. It reminds me of a Go Local Prov this week, I think, had a great cartoon signed by Bob. I'm not sure who that is. But it showed Governor Raimondo trying to get onto a brightly lit stage from a dark back behind a curtain. And she was tied to an anchor that was, public opinion in Rhode Island. And the microphone was the national political stage. And she was just trying to get to that microphone. That's all she wanted to do. They're looking for any angle. And, I mean, in some regards, it shouldn't be this complicated that you have all these angles that you have to find, and only people with tons of money can pay the lawyers to look for them. But it is. And, I mean, there you go. They're on top of it. I thought of you also today. Governor Raimondo, just now with the filing of the ethics complaint, says that this deal is totally standard. And I it's just so laughable, because all of Rhode Island political commentariat over the past week has been talking about how unusual this is, and how it seems, like you just said, like some kind of way to get around the opposition, or her intra-party opposition, maybe Mattiello and so on, and find her own little organization, Democrat Party organization, to help her in these sorts of ways. It's totally standard. Well, no, it's not. Just that urge to pretend that something is what it isn't. And I think, as I said, it's all very telling and clarifying.
And it also comes down to, I think, the whole element where Patrick Ward, he said, he did an interview with Channel 10, and it's one of those things, I don't know anything about him, I don't know his background, who told him he should speak, not speak, but one of the things that he said to Channel 10 was the reason he posted that whole Godfather meme was, well, it was out of anger because they knocked my wife, Sabina Matos, out of power. Well, does that mean, was he afraid that that would upset the agreement that they had with the, as the Providence Democrat City Committee? Like, did that come into play? Because what struck me odd about that was, if someone was coaching him, you'd say that it was done in humor, that you didn't mean it, that because you were angry, that it was done, oh, I was just kidding around, I shouldn't have done that, I was just trying to be funny. But and instead, he says that it was done out of anger, which I found interesting. He also, in that meme, put, I'll have an awful awful. Now, that's a dig, from what I have heard, that obviously the Mattiello people didn't take, because you go back to the whole meeting with him and Leo Skenyon, and you also had Gallison that met Justin at the Newport Creamery. So the Mattiello people took that was a dig at them, that throwing the awful awful as if they're meeting at Newport Creamery. But for her to somehow try to say that this is somehow business as usual, I mean, that there's nothing business as usual about this in any way. And especially, what about the fact that she still has not released this secret fundraising agreement that they have?
Right. If it were totally standard, you would think she'd be able to say, look, here it is. I mean, it's just straightforward. They'll do party building, and I'll direct people to them to help my party. You know, if that's all it says, then that would be not something you'd necessarily have to keep classified, as it were. But the thing with the Italian memo, that part of it is another one of these fascinating areas that's so revealing, even in this little story. So you've got, essentially, it's a political hit, this sort of weaponized identity politics. So if somebody offends you, based on your ethnicity or whatever, you hold on to that for a month and a half, or however long it was, and then release it at an opportune time when you see political advantage to doing it. And I think at this point, largely through obviously the left and largely Democrat partisans, identity politics has been weaponized to such an extent that you can't even say anymore, oh, come on, I was just joking around. we've all made we've all made jokes about, hey, Irish drinking or Italian mafia or whatever. We've all made jokes about people we know like that in time. But now with social media and this identity politics atmosphere, you for something that was online for, I don't know how long it was on, but for a relatively short period of time, that can become a weapon to knock you out of some office when you do something politically inconvenient. And I mean, you bring up Mattiello, and we're talking about all these interlocking parts. One of the people who wasn't in the room when the city commission committee voted for this agreement with Raimondo was Vincent Igliozzi, who's the father of John Igliozzi, who was in the MEM. And, you know, I don't know all of the inside Democrat relationships, but you can see the sort of forming battle lines. And again, it's revealing of what we all kind of suspect goes on and actually is going on. And it's a shame, though, you have to be this connected to be involved. That there always seem to be these overlapping layers of relationships and employee people hiring people for government jobs. And that's maybe the most discouraging thing out of it all.
You know what else? And folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. We're speaking with Justin Katz, managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com. I want to ask you about Chairman Bell's complaint in just a moment. But you start to see where some of this stuff started to come together. And just you go back to some of the headlines from last summer. Matos pushing rule change that would make her the city council president. That was from last June. Sabina Matos, Democrat, promoted to acting president. Sabina Matos called for the resignation of school board president. So she was the acting council president. And at the same time, she is program development, Rhode Island Department of Administration for Human Resources, Outreach, and Diversity. So she is, think of that, Justin, where she is a chief program development, outreach and diversity, human resources for the state. She is at the time acting city council president. And then last June, they give a state job to her husband, Patrick Ward, at $72,000 a year. And he just happens to be the chairman of the Providence Democrat City Committee. You can see, Justin, where all of this becomes very intertwined, that I would also believe that they felt they didn't see this ambush coming, where she was going to get knocked out of this. But what do you make of Chairman Bell's complaint? Because the way, first of all, he I don't know if he's lost yet with the Ethics Commission. He is an attorney. He's really smart. They go through what he mentioned to me when I spoke to him. He and Steve Frias went through the whole thing. This does sound that they have a solid case that Governor Raimondo should not have been making a deal with an employee who Patrick Ward, even if he didn't want to go along with this, the wife has the administration job. He just got hired. How would you not say that he felt pressured to go along with this deal?
Oh, well, absolutely you can say that. And I'm glad that the Republican Party is pursuing this, because this area of Rhode Island's ethics needs to be fleshed out. And if I'm correct in how it's going to come out, it needs to be understood that these are the rules and that's corrupt. But, you know, I believe that if you look through the code of ethics and even probably the precedent of past decisions, they've got a very strong case. I just with the experience of having brought a case of literally with video of a town solicitor getting up and walking around a table to represent a client and being told, no, that's not an ethic. When he advised the council on the matter, then advised the clerk, then went back and represented the council, and then represented the clerk before the council. I mean, it's open and shut if you have any concept that state employment or town employment or government employment generally is actual employment, where you make money and make your living at it and have financial interest in it. That I've found that to be often absent from the Ethics Commission's rulings. So maybe with the brighter spotlight, obviously I was just some guy filing a complaint at that time.
Right.
Maybe with the spotlight of the news media, they'll have a more difficult time coming to that conclusion. Given what I've seen from the Ethics Commission, I'm not optimistic that this is going to do more than raise awareness, which is great. I mean, that's the main thing we need to raise. A slap on the wrist and a small fine isn't going to be that big a deal if it happens. But the fact that people are seeing how this all works, I think is very important. And so I applaud them for filing the complaint.
Absolutely. And Justin, I want to ask you about now, several years ago, I remember I was interviewing at the time, he was the chairman of the party, Chairman Bill Lynch, the embattled chairman. And he, at the time, I was saying it made no sense to do the primaries in September because then people, it's tough to get people to pay attention in the summertime, and then they come back, and then it's such a whirlwind after the primary for then the general, as we saw 4 years ago with Raimondo had the primary against Claypell and Tavares, and then also Ken Block and Mayor Fung faced off. So at the time, Chairman Lynch said to me, well, there are a number of states that have the primary in June, and then at least the candidates have the summertime to kind of get reorganized and gear up and fundraise and then get geared, and then things kind of really kick into gear after Labor Day. Well, Secretary of State Nelly Gobea comes out with the idea of moving up the primary. But what's very interesting to me is she says, Secretary of State Nelly Gobea, let's move it up to August. Now, August, I mean, who the hell would, I mean, the biggest month when people are on vacation across the country is August. To me, the only rationale for August would be if you want to make an argument for more emergency voting, more early voting, and more mail ballots, because then it would be like, well, of course people are doing more mail ballots and early voting and everything else because I'm going to be away on vacation. So, I mean, September is bad enough just because basically they have to campaign during July and August when a lot of people are not paying attention. But what was your reaction in hearing her thought is to actually move the primaries into the month of August?
Well, it does. I mean, I agree with what your characterization. You know, you're putting it in a time when people are going to be away. Even if that weren't the case, in summer when people are busy and not really, the more campaigning activity you can move to that, the more strength you give to the people who are actually going out there with the mail ballots in hand so that they can get the people to vote. To vote for their candidate. So the activists have an advantage when everybody else is distracted. You know, in general, you would want as much time for candidates to be out there campaigning as possible. And you want to resolve who are our candidates going to be. So you've got your primary done. I think June is much more realistic, much more helpful in that regard. But it's just always impressive how clever they can be. So they're doing something that in general looks like it's a great thing to help democracy, right? You increase the amount of time that you have the candidates settled and running for office, but then they pick a time in that window. You know, you have September, and then you have all the time in the world before September. And when do you pick? A few weeks earlier in the middle of August.
Yes! It's terrible. That's worse than September. I mean, the too much you want to avoid is July and August. At least June, people are still kind of in the routine. They're around. They haven't gone on vacation yet. Kids are still in school. Whenever the kids are still in school, kind of keeps everybody in their routine. When summer hits, forget it. That's when people, newspaper, people stop reading the newspaper. It's light out. They stop watching the news as much. I mean, if you were going to do it, I was thinking, all right, first or second week of June before then everyone bolts for the summertime. But August, I mean, I was laughing out loud. I mean, that's worse than doing it in September, Justin.
Oh, yeah. Well, absolutely. And what do you gain? A couple of weeks when people aren't around and they're trying to get back into the swing of things after getting back from vacation. Just too many games played with our electoral
yes.
system.
Now, before we let you go, and again, folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. I speak with Justin Katz, managing editor for Ocean State Current. Justin, the progressives have really been going after Mike Stenhouse. I think Mike Sten, Rhode Island Center for Freedom and Prosperity, good afternoon, Christine and Barbara. He wrote a great piece about the progressive attitudes. They are becoming more militant. They are becoming more aggressive. They're putting out their pledge, their marching orders. Ruggenberg, of course, carrying the flag, trying to go to Lieutenant Governor, but they are showing again just how much anyone that remotely, if they feel that they are slighted or anyone that comes up with something different, how quick they are to go on the attack the way they did against Mike Stenhouse, who I thought raised some, I thought some very interesting reasonable proposals. How where is the business voice? Where is the business voice to step up? That Greater Providence Chamber of Commerce, where Lori White stands up and says, yeah, we're going to do a pact with the unions. I mean, this is like something out of On the Waterfront. A pact with the unions? The unions that want to infiltrate all your private businesses and then continue to destroy the state? I mean, nowhere else do you see that. But I'd really like you to touch on the way this battle that's been going back and forth between Mike Sten and the progressives.
Right. Well, just disclosure, people probably know, but just to make sure I've said it, Mike's my boss at the Center for Freedom and Prosperity. So that gives me some insight into his motivation for his op-ed. And I think a lot of it was we have a sort of frustration, because we'll hear from a lot of people, oh, we got to change this, we got to do that. And we'll say, okay, let's go. And I don't want to really stick my head out. And we'll hear from people who've had experience with audits after they've said something publicly. And so we hear from people who don't want to be boycotted by the progressives or audited by the government or what have you. And so that was some of the frustration there. And obviously it kind of proves his point for the progressives to just jump right out and start attacking him. You know, and we're always backed by the Koch brothers and all that. And it's just not true. But what's really telling on that part is that I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, but the person from the young progressives who wrote a letter in response to Mike's op-ed, Lofton Senshaw, I think is would be how you pronounce it. But he's saying that, you know, the business community is always there with their lobbyists, and to say that their voice is not represented is crazy. But we're at the center, we're not talking about the lobbyist version, like you say, the Chamber of Commerce, the hospitality group. Those are people who've been almost appointed by the government as the voices for the business people. So everything has to filter through them. They sort of come on stage. Whenever a commission needs somebody who's, quote, a business representative, they go to them. And so they sort of run interference, in my view, for the government, and to block off any kind of real activism from businesses. So businesses have nowhere to go, and then they see that if they step forward and say something, they could be targeted either by the government, from the government, or from activists. And don't forget, we've got, you know, every now and then you'll see a story about activists showing up at a legislator's house and picketing in the middle of the night, in front of their house, and leaving signs all over the yard so that their neighbors can see this is somebody to avoid. And people think, well, what if I did that with my business? Would these people be out there? So it's this intimidation game. We're trying to find some way to relieve that, but it's very difficult, because you can understand why people would want to be quiet. And the so-called business representatives are really not helping in this regard, and we're certainly not in line with them. We've lost a lot of ground with the chamber type people over the years on the current and at the center, because we've pointed out that their executives are really, really well paid and get money from the state for some of their related foundations, the air quotes foundations. When we wanted to eliminate the sales tax, for example, one of the, I think, a representative of Providence Chamber who was on the commission to study that in the legislature said it would be a crime to threaten this source of government revenue. So they're government satellites. They're not the business voice. And the progressives, that's how they like it. They like to have everybody represented so everybody, they can go in the back room and make their deals, and we'll give you and your organization this amount of money and this kind of face-saving $50 cut in a corporate minimum tax or whatever it might be, and we'll give the progressives this, and we'll give the unions this. This is maybe the defining problem we have to figure out how to overcome in Rhode Island is this fear. Not only, well, we've been talking this whole time about the sort of corruption of the process to cheat in elections, in a sense, and then there's the other side of that, which is intimidate the other side so they're not able to be active like they should be. And that's the piece we really need to find ways to overcome.
Folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. It's Political Monday with our Justin Katz, managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com. Justin, before we let you go, one final thought. I'd like to hear, last week, Mayor Alorza attempted to give his State of the City address. He was drowned out by It depends on the numbers. First, they were saying 500. Then I've seen as much as 1,000. It was Providence teachers. They're upset with their contract. They went in. The video that the Providence Journal posted, it's disturbing to watch because he walks in, they're booing, they're catcalling. Teachers now, he thinks that they're going to stop at some point and then realizes that they have no intentions of stopping. He attempts to give a speech, so then their whole MO is to drown him out. Afterwards, the head of the union had no apologies, said, it's really not our problem. We want to make sure he noticed us. Blah, blah, blah. Alors is saying this transformational contract, no one knows what that means. But what stood out to me was several things. Number one, not one public elected official came out. The Journal did an editorial, but Mark Patinkin wrote, various people talked about it, but not one person talked about how highly inappropriate that was. That it was a form of intimidation, it was a form of bullying, it was completely inappropriate for anyone to do that, let alone teachers. That union head was like, oh, I think the kids would be proud of us. That's not our problem. Couldn't have cared less. But Governor Raimondo didn't say a word. No one spoke out in any way against what was a blatant, really embarrassing display of boorish behavior. And if that had been a group of Republicans that went, that didn't like something was going on in the city or something like that, I just wonder if the mayor would have stood by or how everyone was silent in the aftermath of that. These weren't Pipefitters Union. This wasn't the Electrical Union. It wasn't even the firefighters. These are supposed to be the teachers. Mayor Lords was saying, hey, listen, you know, they want two raises in the course of a year. The Providence schools, I saw a report, are 12% proficient. I mean, it couldn't be in worse shape, and these people still demanding they want raises. And they tried to say the schools were unsafe, but it really just came down to their raises. But again, you didn't hear one word about this from the education commissioner criticizing it, from the governor criticizing it, from no one. No one would come out and criticize their behavior, which was just so over the top at the State of the City address. I want to hear your thoughts on it.
Well, I don't know if the language of barrier on public radio would allow me to express my thoughts. The government might call it totally standard. This is just totally standard operating. You know, it's disgusting. It really is. And this sort of thing, you see it all over the place. Whatever town, city, whenever there's some strife, you'll see this sort of thing. Usually you don't see it as visibly because they're usually not so bold as to do this during a State of the City address or something big. Usually it's just school committee meetings or what have you, where they go and they do this behavior. And that's why I think every parent in Rhode Island should have to go to school committee meetings during union negotiating season, because it's disgusting and it's terrifying. And frankly, it's one of the reasons I think a lot of us choose private schools, because you see this behavior and you say, I don't want these people to have authority over my children in any way whatsoever. And the fact that nobody calls it out, it just shows you how much this is part of our system. It feels almost like you start to see hints of what it must be like to live in sort of totalitarian or dictatorships or that kind of thing that are run by thuggish partisans like
yep.
that. It really is disturbing. And the fact that they just, you know, that's how it goes. I was at the time, all the teachers were tweeting and stuff, and I got in a back and forth on Twitter with one, I guess the husband of one of them, and he says no other professional has their pay cut. And what deluded world are you living in? I mean, when I was in construction, we saw an actual pay cut of about 15% during the recession. So, actually, you were making this much this week, and next week you're making 15% less. Not this, our pay increase didn't cover the increase in our healthcare costs. I mean, welcome to the real world, pal. The fact that they think this is something to go out there and parade around, and I heard the union head talking at the time. I think she was in Washington at an AFL-CIO convention, and just the tone of voice was even thuggish. I mean, it's just, eh, that's not our problem, whatever. And then they bring up the school, the conditions of the schools. Well, where's the money going?
Right.
All the money we pay for education, where is it going?
Right.
It's not going to the schools, obviously. It's going to your pay. You're overpaid. And as you say, I laughed at this when the governor was going around to the high schools giving speeches for free college. These schools, they're barely proficient in math. Their English isn't much better. And what grounds do they have? In any sane world, people in Rhode Island would be just pulling their hair out, saying, this is not how you behave as a teacher. It's not how government should run. And this isn't, obviously, we need to adjust our budgets because we're not getting what we're paid to do. But I think it goes right back. In teaching, in education, you get much the same thing that we were just talking about in the business world. You get parents who, they don't want to come forward. Your kid might be targeted. That was in Tiverton, when I first started seeing this, that was a big thing, was the school committee president was starting to really speak out about her daughter being targeted in the schools as they negotiated. And people don't want that. And so they keep their heads down. Maybe this will pass over. Let's just give them some more money. And I don't know, who's going to stop it? You know, where's the person who's going to step forward, whether it's the business community or the parents or whoever, somebody who's willing to step forward in politics and say something. It's frightening, and it really has to stop, and it won't stop until people start speaking up.
You know what else is amazing, Justin, before we let you go, is, and it just seems the teachers, the firefighters, everything is about the contract. Everything is about negotiating. Everything is about, it's all about that. And what is completely disturbing and so wildly inappropriate is they have a monopoly. You have to deal with these people. Would you behave that way if there were three other groups of teachers that could come into the schools? What private entity would ever act that way? They don't even understand. You know, the head of the union, they don't even understand that it's completely unfair to behave that way and have the hammer over taxpayers using the students as the pawns in this whole thing, because it comes down to the children. And in the same way of, you know, hey, if your house was on fire, you want someone coming in. And they fancy themselves as tough, and they're tough negotiators, and it's always about the contract, and it's going to be about the next contract. And then even you have communities that they have a contract, but they don't like their contract, so then they go to the work to rule. You saw it in Warwick. You saw it. We talked about it last summer in East Greenwich, where they stack, move the meeting. I can't hear you. I mean, it's all, Justin, it's all games. And it's people that are not accustomed to it, of seeing it, I can tell you, are absolutely flabbergasted and appalled by it. And it's that type of behavior of, you know, and you describe it, of just the tone of, yeah, you know, that's not our problem. We are going to do that. And all this other the sense of entitlement, the sense of the justification, but without question, the lock they have on the Democrat Party, where, you know, nowhere else would that be accepted. And, you know, we all, the world watched last week, or not about the world, but Sporting News, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo, right? $137 million contract. Hey, that is the free market. You have all the different NFL teams. He's got an agent. Here's what he thinks, we think he's worth. And the 49ers are willing to step up and pay it. But these people, they think they're those sophisticated negotiators when it is a complete rigged game. And I'll give you the final word.
Well, yeah, and they steal so many bases in order to get that. I was thinking, at one point when my wife was teaching in a private school, they took a pay cut because they had to keep the school open, because it was the changes in the military were changing the dynamics in the school, so that they were having trouble. That's what you do. You know, most people, I think, most teachers go into it wanting to do well and to do the right thing for people. And it's almost like this cult mentality that the union gets them in. And they've got this lock now. Not only, I mean, teachers can't get a job very much. I mean, there are a lot of private schools, but, you know, if you want one of these big, well-paying jobs in education, you have to tolerate the union and kiss up to the right people, and so that they suck in there. So the union has a monopoly over that school district. The school district has a near monopoly over education in the state. Although in Rhode Island, actually, I think it's more than double the rate of private school usage than you see nationwide, because people are trying to get out of this system. So the the teachers dominate the schools dominate education, and if you want to change anything, you've got to go through the one party that has a lock on the state. So you've got sort of three layers of monopoly contributing to this, and who is hurt are the kids who need an education, and that's why we see this great, and the taxpayers, obviously, because we have no, they take all the money for no return, and then we see these kids, those who do make it out, qualified to do stuff, leave the state because there are no jobs and they've seen what it's like here, and they go elsewhere where it's better to live. It all comes back to the same basic problems of we need people to go out there and admit when say when things are wrong and fix them and allow each other to kind of live lives in a way that doesn't always funnel back to my pension and my specialty license plate and my great benefits.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, we used to, when I first started really writing about politics in Rhode Island 15 years ago or so, those were all, you know, fun jokes. You know, the pension and the Blue Cross and the low-numbered license plates. The kind of cute Rhode Island-y jokes. But at this point, it's not a joke.
No.
When you watch what's happening in the City Hall with teachers not allowing an elected official to give a speech. You know, what more can you say than that has to change?
Yeah. Folks, he is managing editor at OceanStateCurrent.com. He's excellent. He's our friend Justin Katz. Justin, great to talk to you. We'll talk to you again.
Likewise, John. Talk to you next week.
All right. Folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. With that, we'll open up the phone line, 766-1380, 766-1380. Political Monday, brought to you by K&R Auto Salvage. Remember, call them today. Family-run business. They do a tremendous job, folks. It's K&R Auto Salvage. Call them today. They'll give you the most money for your junk car and 80% off retail prices with access to nationwide inventory. K&R Auto Salvage, 353-9200. Good afternoon. It is John DePietro, 766-1380. You can email me, john@depietro.com. This portion of the John DePietro Show is brought to you by the Lodge Pub and Eatery, 40 Breakneck Hill Road in Lincoln. Whether it's lunch or dinner, you're going to love the Lodge Pub and Eatery, 40 Breakneck Hill Road in Lincoln. Stop in, whether it's lunch or dinner, or they also have the famous salad bar, the lounge with the big screen TVs, the Lodge Pub and Eatery, 40 Breakneck Hill Road in Lincoln. It's John DePietro. So this story of, and we had it earlier, and later on, if you go to WNRI.com, you'll be able to see where we'll post the interview that we had with with the chairman of the Rhode Island Republican Party, Chairman Brandon Bell. He has filed an ethics complaint against Governor Raimondo. And apparently Governor Raimondo trying to say, oh, this is a, you know, standard operating procedure. Nothing unusual about this. Well, I mean, no one believes that. It is completely unprecedented. It shouldn't happen. And the Governor Raimondo needs to answer some questions about this secret agreement. It is terrible. It is good to see. I mean, anything that can slowly kind of bring her down a little bit is good. Hey, folks, how about this? No green cards for illegals on welfare, food stamps, and Medicaid under the president's proposal. The Trump administration, another effort to reduce illegals, want to deny permanent residence to hundreds of thousands of foreigners living legally in the United States. Homeland Security is proposing deny so-called green cards to legals of their children if they receive federal or state aid, even if the children are U.S. born. Now, that is one of those things in Rhode Island where there's so much money that go to what they call anchor babies. The child is born. The mother comes here when she's 9 months pregnant. She gives birth to the child, women and infants, and now, boom, the child is considered a U.S. citizen. You can't get rid of them. And so what happens? They receive all state services, government service, everything else. The Trump administration wants to cut into that. So I applaud the Trump administration for doing that, because somebody has to be held accountable. We can't afford it. There's far too much money. Never mind in this state, a sanctuary state where it's overly generous. Now, on this Monday, do what I did. And that is, why not upgrade your cell phone the way I did with our friends Sal and Metro PCS. And again, congratulations to Sal. He had a beautiful, we usually talk to him at this time, beautiful baby, his first child. Congratulations to Sal. Beautiful baby daughter, Valentina. sent me a photo. She is just beautiful, healthy. Mom and baby are just fine. So, but Sal has five locations. Folks, stop in. The guy is the greatest. Now a father. How about that? Brand new baby with our friend Sal and Metro PCS. And right now you can get two lines, unlimited LTE data for just $80. That's right. Two lines, unlimited data, $80 plus two free awesome smartphones when you switch over with our friend Sal at Metro PCS. Stop in and see them. Five locations, 1027 Cranston Street in Cranston. Now, that is right near Rite Aid. That is his Cranston location. Sal is also 989 Manton Avenue in Providence, right behind Rhode Island College near CVS. Smith Street in North Providence, right next to Salon d'Italia. Atwood Avenue in Johnston, right next to Johnston Town Hall. And also Plainfield Pike in Johnson, right off of 295. And remember, you can always call Sal at Metro PCS at 332-5051, 332-5051, and make an appointment. Great. He is the best. And again, congratulations to Sal. Welcome to the world, little Valentina, his beautiful new baby daughter, born over the weekend on Saturday, 6 pounds. So adorable. Congratulations to Sal and his wonderful family. And again, also, he is our proud sponsor of Facebook Live with EliteWirelessRI.com. Thank you to all that have been watching on EliteWirelessRI.com. So, folks, we're going to have to wait and see exactly what's going to happen with the governor. But I applaud Chairman Brandon Bell. He is someone that has stepped up, calling the governor out on this whole thing, taking her on, and making a loud statement to the Raimondo administration. Now, we also have some good news, by the way, on this Monday. How about this is just crossing. Next year, the cost to attend Brown University will top $70,000 next year. And they'll still be an unbelievable waiting list of kids trying to get in. $70,000 to attend Brown next year. Good news for the URI Rams. In USA Today, the URI Ram basketball team is ranked 14th in the country. In the AP poll, they are ranked 16th in the country. Folks, as many of you know, I played basketball. I followed college basketball. This is very simple. Coach Hurley, what an incredible job he has done with that program. He is actually the better coach. Nothing against Coach Cooley, but Hurley is the better coach. But URI basketball, 14th in the country. Now, what that really means is come around NCAA time, when you have the four brackets, East, South, West, Midwest, URI now easily could end up being a fourth seed. Possibly the chance over the next couple weeks to move into being a three seed. So the four top teams are then number one seeds around the country. If you're in the top eight, then teams 5 through 8 are then number two seeds around the country. Teams 9 through 12 are three seeds around the country, and then teams 13 through 16 are four seeds around the country. URI is flirting with being a third or fourth seed by the time they come down to NCAA. But to jump up to 14th in the country, 16th in one poll, 14th in another, and they are not stopping. They are just on a tear. They could possibly be really tough, but break the top 10, which would be incredible. So congratulations to Coach Hurley and the team down at URI. That is really just tremendous for him, and they put in so much work with that program. And I'm glad for President Dave Dooley. What a great coach they have. Hey, another, again, just a reminder, folks, stop in and see our friends at Grow It Green. Trimmer rental, $300. CO2 tank refills, $20. Grow It Green, located 122 Pulaski Boulevard in Bellingham. They're open 7 days a week. Southern New England's indoor garden supply shop. Grow It Green. They're open 7 days a week. You can call them at 508-883-4769. Grow It Green, Southern New England's only five-star rated indoor growing supply store. 20 years experience, competitive pricing, top brands. Consultations are available, and a friendly, educated staff able to assist you with all aspects of your grow. Stop in and see them. Grow It Green, 122 Pulaski Boulevard in Bellingham. They're open 7 days a week. You can call them at 508-883-4769. And also remember, all this month, take advantage of the savings. President's Day savings at Paul Massey. All three award-winning Paul Massey dealerships. President's Day savings all month. Stop it and see them. Paul Massey Buick GMC South, right across from the tower, New England's number one Buick dealer. Paul Massey Chevrolet, Route 44, Taunton Avenue, New England's number one Chevrolet dealer. And then Paul Massey Chevrolet South, right by the Riverwalk. Remember, always online at paulmassey.com. Don't forget our friends at Propane Plus. Tim Johnson and his family, what a tremendous job they do. Folks, Propane Plus, family-run business, full-service provider, propane, Rhode Island, and southeastern Mass. Call Propane Plus today, and they'll help you save money. 508-252-3359. Rhode Island location, 885-4209. Propane Plus, your source for everything propane. So it's John DePietro. Again, Governor Raimondo has some problems with this whole situation regarding the ethics complaint filed by, I am so glad, the head of the Republican Party filed that complaint against her. There's no way to get out of this one easy. It seems very obvious what the governor was involved in. So cheers to Brandon Bell for doing that. Hey, tomorrow we have a special guest on our program. We will have a very special, I'll introduce him, but if you are a dog owner, cat owner, we will have Rhode Island's top veterinarian in studio to answer your questions, take your phone calls. That's tomorrow at noon right here on the John DePietro Show. So congratulations to Sal and Angie. Welcome to the world, little Valentina. And also congratulations, URI basketball. That is tremendous. Ranked, depending on two different polls, either 14th or 16th in the country. It's John DePietro. Enjoy this Monday. We're back tomorrow at 11. John Dion is next right here at AM 1380. And it's 95.1 FM. And it's WNRI.